And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I am Phil Taylor, and Phil Conlon is here. Yes. How you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil. We're doing well.
And today we're going to be talking about the assassination in South Africa of Colonel Patrick Karegeya. He's apparently strangled in Johannesburg hotel on December 31st, and there has been reaction around the world. This is not the first former leader of Rwanda who has been murdered abroad and outside the country of Rwanda. Many have been murdered inside, actually. We're going to be talking with Dr. Teyajin Rudasingwa, who was a close colleague of Patrick Karegeya. At the later in the program, we will speak to Stephen Gowans, who has written a number of interesting essays recently at the gowans.wordpress.com. He's discussing such issues as the comparison of the leaders Robert Mugabe and Nelson Mandela and the way they are perceived in the West or portrayed. And he also has been talking about the myths about the Soviet Union and the whole history of the so-called Cold War. Stephen writes very interesting material. And a third thing we're going to talk to him about is the recent UN reports indicating that indeed the rebels in Syria are the most likely to have used chemical weapons. No surprise, it's a Taylor Report, but anyhow, you can always remind you, you can reach us at Taylor at CIUT.FM if you want to write to us. And you can, of course, check us out on the web, Taylor-Report.com. I'll just tell you a little book advisory. We're a partisan to Clancy Siegel. And Clancy Siegel in Counterpunch, I really recommend. Over the weekend, he wrote a short essay about Hollywood and fascism and relations between the role of women in a Nazi culture and the rationalization of their parts in the crimes of Nazism. And then he makes a little sidebar into new films glorifying torture. And Clancy makes a very nice comparison about how suddenly women are being given in Hollywood. They're being given the key role in making the decision to hurt somebody to get the facts so that the good guys can win. And he sees that as a trend. And believe me, that essay is short and sweet, as they say, but it's right on the money. And we'll try to hook up with Clancy. Now, I want to just tell you about our guest who will be coming up. His name is Dr. Teyajin Rudasingwa. He's written a book. We interviewed him about his book a couple of weeks back, Healing a Nation, a Testimony. And you can go to Amazon to get that. But he sets this. That book is very helpful in setting the stage for to understand what's going on in contemporary Rwanda. There have been a number of major leaders of Rwanda who, under the Kagame regime that's been in existence since 1994, who have chosen to depart from that country and upon leaving have explained why they no longer wish to associate with the regime. I want to make a point here. I know that most people try to follow the issue, Central Africa, have heard the words Tutsi and Hutu, and they tend to want to see the story as that being a conflict between those two people. I find it interesting that Dr. Rudasingwa and the other members of the Rwanda National Congress, I believe I have the title right, we'll get it right, actually have a very large number of Hutu and Tutsi elements. So it's not a question of ethnicity in that grouping. They are very aware of each other. They discuss their common experiences, and it is actually a rather hopeful sign. I'm not endorsing anybody's political approach, but I am very pleased to see Hutu and Tutsi working so closely together. At any rate, so that we'll be going into that with Dr. Rudasingwa. I have a quote of the day apropos of U.S. militarism, over the holiday weekend, I guess it was holiday, there was a football game. It's staged by, it's called a high school All-America All-Star football game. It's the best high school football players in America, and you can imagine these guys are good. You're at this point, when a kid reaches his senior year of high school in Texas, there's a good chance he could play pro. It's the same with basketball. There's more and more of this happening. Very good. So they have this game, and people tune in by the millions. The sponsor of the game was the American Army. And so in the stands were whole sections of the stadium of soldiers in their fatigues. And, of course, and then around the stadium and at the 50-yard line and whatnot are these toys that you can, you know, you can drive one of these. You can blow up half of a major city. Kids are crawling all over them, of course. By the way, I can tell you, I remember being a boy and wanting to me, they were like toys. I wish I could fly one of those. I wish I could fire that because, the bang and the splash. Anyway, which brings me to what you would call a curious quotation. And this is from the second president of the United States. His name was John Quincy Adams. And he was John Quincy Adams, and he is the second president.
I got it right. His son was John Quincy Adams.
No,
is he also? But he didn't call himself that. He called himself John Adams.
I know, but the author of this book, who didn't consult Phil before he took up his part, he was John Quincy Adams.
Okay.
Yeah, and his son calls him so. But he's identified. I appreciate that.
Because he's not identified in the popular mind as John Quincy Adams.
Well, he definitely is the second president of the United States, and this is something he wrote in March of 1801, which is he's talking about his fellow Federalists. There was two major parties developed in the United States, the Federalists and the Republicans. And he was kind of a middle of the road, what you call a moderate Republican today. At any rate, he was unhappy that with some of his colleagues, particularly Alexander Hamilton, who he thought seemed to be bent on having a war. And he was not opposed to a war with France, but he was unhappy that they were so, there seemed to be this push, which he thought was extreme. So he says, if they had adopted for a maxim that a foreign war must be fostered for the sake of maintaining an army and increasing the public debt, it was time that they should be removed from the management of affairs. So that's the second president of the United States. Imagine that. Here was a president who said, people who want to use war as an excuse to hold on to power and to increase the public debt, you have to remove them. Nobody was going to say that today, so I just wanted to tell all our Canadian men and American listeners, you might want to meditate on John Quincy Adams. I'm going to insist on that. And he's kind of helpful because he's kind of like Eisenhower. He wasn't even flaming radical. He's no Jefferson. Everybody agreed to call Jefferson a Jacobin, and in their speeches, they would call him a follower of Robespierre, et cetera, which he was not, but he was close enough that they could get away with it. That's a quote of the day. But we are joined now, I believe, by Dr. Theogen Rudasingwa. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I'm there. How do you feel?
I'm well, and I want to tell you, I offer my condolences. This is tragic that someone has been assassinated, Colonel Patrick Karegeya, in Johannesburg, South Africa, a very important capital, a very important state. And I don't see a lot of reportage on it, although there has been world attention. I want to know, you are one of the leaders of a political movement opposing the present government of Rwanda, of Paul Kagame, and he was your close colleague. Could you tell us who he was, something about Patrick Aregea, and also why do you think he was assassinated? If you think there's any doubt that he was assassinated?
No, there's no doubt. Colonel Patrick Aregea was assassinated. As you all know, I have appeared on this show many times before, and others before me have testified and talked on this radio show. The way Patrick was assassinated fits the pattern of other people who have perished at the hands of the Kagame regime. Patrick was one of us. He was one of the leaders of the Rwanda National Congress, mm-hmm. one of the founders, and when he served in Rwanda, he was the chief of external intelligence for so many years, and after that he fell out for the same reasons that many Rwandans fell out with the regime, and was arrested and imprisoned for quite some time, and then he ran to South Africa. It wasn't the first time that the regime was planning to assassinate him, but finally, of course, the regime was able to kill him. So it's a pattern that we see across the ethnic divide, Hutus and Tutsis. Mm-hmm. It's something that the Rwandans are by now very familiar to.
Yes. We did an interview with Patrick Aregea, in 2012, and you know, we were speaking to him as someone who was discussing the attempt on the life of General Yamwasa in June of 2010, and there's an ongoing trial. I understand three Tanzanians and three Rwandans are, of course, in custody. I think the trial is completed. And could you tell us about that, indicate how determined and how reckless the leadership of Rwanda is if they're carrying out this kind of murder?
Yeah, you might recall that in 2010, indeed, there were two assassination attempts on General Nyamwasa. And in fact, at that time, there was also attempts to assassinate Patrick Aregea himself. The court case is continuing as we speak. And Kagame being who he is and the regime being what it is, it keeps on looking for more and more victims, and so Aregea is the latest victim, mm-hmm. But certainly he won't be the last one. And if you might recall, stretching back into the early days of the RSF regime, you remember all the killings that have taken place, from the shooting down of the plane to mm-hmm. the killings that have taken place and documented by the Gerson report, the Kibeho massacres, the mapping report, the assassination of Citizen Dashonga, many journalists and political leaders who've been assassinated. So it's a pattern that is widespread, that is now really pushing the Rwandan society on the brink of yet another violent conflict.
Yes, I saw, General Yamwasa, and happily through Internet now we can access broadcasts, for example, from South Africa. I saw him interviewed on a television program there. He made the point that he said, you know, we have in South Africa, there are refugees from Angola, there are refugees from Congo, refugees from Zimbabwe, and Burundi elsewhere. He said, but the only group that is being targeted for assassination are the Rwandans. And he said, yes. You have to ask why that is.
And you see, Phil, the other factor that is a phenomenon that listeners need to appreciate is that before, it was the Hutus who were, predominantly the victims of the brutal regime in Kigali. Mm-hmm. But now, of course, Aregea is a Tutsi. Mm-hmm. General Nyamwasa is a Tutsi. Mm-hmm. All people that Kagame is hunting down are both now Hutus and Tutsis. And remember also last year, Victor Ingabire was sentenced to 15 years in jail for no other reason other than that she wanted to stand for the presidency. And she said that, look, it's not only the Tutsis who suffered, also the Hutus were killed. And yes, for that, of course, she was handed the 15-year jail sentence. So it's really Kagame's viciousness crosses ethnic boundaries and regional boundaries.
Yeah, it is. It does seem to indicate that he wishes to have a sectarian, exclusive view of the tragedy of 1994. That the crime that he alleges it against yourself and against General Yamwasa and others is that they acknowledge that, yes, Hutu also died and died in the Congo as well, that there were later crimes committed in which the RPF forces were involved. That, to him, is what he calls a red line. You cannot say that.
Yes, it does. But that's for precisely the reason why Patrick was killed, because Patrick, like us, like our partners in the opposition, Hutus and Tutsis, we've been saying that we need to recognize that the trauma that has been inflicted on our society touches their families and communities of both Hutus and Tutsis. And so even the Hutu need to be recognized, and they should be allowed to talk about how they lost and how they have how trauma has been inflicted by the Kagame regime. Mm-hmm. And so it's for that kind of recognition that we need to work together as Hutus and Tutsis and recognize the trauma that we've inflicted on each other, and that the regime must stop manipulating the issue of ethnicity that finally Patrick was killed. So he's yet another sacrifice that the Rwandans are making in the struggle for justice and freedom for all.
Yes. This is Dr. Teogen Rudasingwa. By the way, there is a site called The Rwandan. com. I really recommend people go there for update on the news coming from from this crime. Its reportage is not really keeping up to date with all the information. You have to go to the Rwandan.com to know the details. My understanding is that he was apparently strangled, and that I saw a report that involved a group of men who carried this out. And I'm reminded that there was a former bank official, a high-ranking one from the Habyarimana days. His name was Pasteur Musabe, who was killed in exactly this way in the Cameroon, where he was a victim of strangulation by an organized professional group.
Yeah, Phil, can you imagine that in this day and age? I don't know any regime on the planet today, probably the North Korean, where I heard that the young president there fed his uncle on vicious dogs. Mm-hmm. I haven't known any regime in Africa or anywhere in the world that behaves like the Kagame regime. How possible could one contemplate Kagame killing his former ally, somebody that he has, who has served his country and his party, and somebody whom Kagame knew very well, to simply hunt him down and strangle him with a rope in a distant country? I mean, that is so primitive and so despicable that it simply shows the moral depravity. Yeah. Of the Kagame regime, and the person who did that, the listeners might wish to know, this guy by the name of Vaporo, Gafaranga, has not only did he accomplish his mission on behalf of Kagame, now he has surfaced in Kigali, and we are told that he moves around the city. You can see the level of impunity that Kagame has now registered.
Yeah. No, it is. It's going to be interesting and, well, and crucial, I guess would be a better word, to see how the various states react to this, because it's a violation. Obviously, no state wishes assassins to enter and carry out this kind of deed. We've had reports in Europe of Belgium France, but and Britain. The most celebrated case, I think, was that of in England, where the British intelligence informed various Rwandans, exiles, that there was a group of assassins who were trying to enter the country to kill them. This is British intelligence.
Yeah, this is really the impunity of Kagame regime, because we cannot even count how many people have been assassinated in neighboring Uganda, except, of course, in this case, the Rwandan state. The Ugandan state sometimes is an accomplice in some of these crimes that Kagame commits within Uganda, but many people have been assassinated in Kenya, in Tanzania, in Democratic Republic of Congo, in Burundi, and you've mentioned the reports in the United Kingdom where the Metropolitan Police alerted Rwandans that the regime in Rwanda was hunting them down. Mm-hmm. Here in the United States, of course, even we've been informed that we need to be careful because the regime is hunting for us. In South Africa, I've seen what has happened. In West Africa, you mentioned the Musave, what happened. In Mozambique, it has happened.
Yes.
So Kagame's criminal arm is very extensive. Mm-hmm. And what partly fuels this impunity is that he has killed people in masses, has killed individuals. And somehow the international community has either fallen silent or they have actually abetted these crimes by keeping quiet. And
yes.
So the impunity that Kagame continues to commit against the Rwandan people and Congolese people and other foreigners is partly due to the insensitivity of the international community.
Yes, there is this issue, and I wonder if it's still true. And my understanding is that Bill Clinton, the former president of the United States, and Tony Blair, particularly Mr. Blair, provide regular advice and guidance to Mr. Paul Kagame. I wonder if they're going to be able to continue in light of this kind of crime.
Oh, really, really, thank you for asking me that question, because shortly I'll be writing a piece and I will forward it to you. I truly believe that President Clinton, Tony Blair, the former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, there are others like the famous evangelist Rick Warren and another business person called Joe Ritchie, who lives in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I would say this is really the unholy cartel that has been very busy promoting Kagame. And so they are the ones more or less actually protecting Kagame and encouraging him to continue to commit this crime.
Mm-hmm.
I hope... and this is a matter for Canadian citizens, for Americans, for the British, for the rest of the international community, really, to bring pressure on President Clinton, Tony Blair, Joe Ritchie, and Rick mm-hmm. Warren to
yes.
desist from abetting crimes that Kagame is committing against Rwandan people and Congolese people.
Yes. I found it important and striking that the Associated Press, an article by Michelle Fall, dated January 5, pointed out that Colonel Patrick Karagea had given an interview in July of 2013, you know, about 6 months ago, 5 months ago, in which he told Radio France International that he was prepared to testify that Paul Kagame had ordered the shooting down of the plane carrying the president of Rwanda and the president of Burundi, as well as the top commander of the Rwandan army, that is, thereby decapitating the government of Rwanda at that time. He said that order was given by Paul Kagame, and of course you have said that in your book, Healing a Nation, a Testimony. Is it that particular willingness of people who are informed, he was after all in charge of Rwandan intelligence, and who are, and also I understand General Yamwasa has come forward with similar information, which they're prepared to give to courts. Do you think it's that particular matter that played a big role in this assassination?
It did. It did. And certainly Patrick Karegeya coming forward to, and saying he's going to testify against Kagame for these crimes, or General Nyamwasa coming forward to say we are going to testify, even carries more weight than mine, because remember, these were guys who were part of the intelligence system and part of the military system. And so Kagame is crumbling literally for life to make sure that these guys do not testify. Unfortunately, Colonel Patrick Karegeya has died without giving his testimony.
Mm-hmm.
And time is of essence. And let me clarify at this point that I myself brought it to the attention of Judge Trevedy to make sure that at least everything is possible to make sure that the testimony of General Kayumba and Colonel Patrick Karegeya is heard and other witnesses. But, of course, the problem is not with General Kayumba, General Nyamwasa, or Colonel Patrick Karegeya before he died. Mm-hmm. The problem is that the system in France has not moved fast enough to listen to this testimony, which I think will be very, very crucial, not only for the issues of the shooting down of the plane, but some of the crimes that Kagame should be answering for before, for example, the International Criminal Court. And so it's unfortunate that Patrick has died before giving his testimony.
Mm-hmm.
And we really appeal to the judge responsible for the investigation to make sure that these things are done as quickly as possible before Kagame finishes off all the witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not only us, there are other witnesses, but you see, to be able to do that, you need to protect your witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that Patrick has died because he says he's going to be a witness.
Mm-hmm.
And so unless the international community really sees this as something that even goes beyond Jai Trevedy and something that concerns France, I think the better for the Rwandans and the better for the future for healing and reconciliation in our country, because unless the truth is said, it will be very difficult to talk about genuine reconciliation.
Yes, well, I'm very glad that all of you have made statements and written what you know. There is so much on the record, and your book, Healing a Nation, A Testimony, deals in detail with almost all of these matters. I really hope people get a copy of this book. And, of course, there's the Rwandan National Congress. I want to make sure I mention all the groups, the Amahoro People's Congress. It's FDU-INKINGI-RNC. And that involves the supporters of Victoire Ingabire, who, as you say, is in prison. I really hope all this questioning about what sort of individual and what sort of group is running that country will help free Ingabire and bring a democracy. I assume that's your goal as well.
It is our goal, and it's very sad, and but confirms really the brutality of the regime that was simply resort to imprisoning political opponents and killing them. Which really, in our opinion and the opinion of many Rwandans, that has no place in a society that has suffered so much, that we should be talking about healing and reconciliation, freedom and genuine democracy and the rule of institutions rather than the rule of brutal dictators.
Mm-hmm.
So Victoire Ingabire is yet another hero. Like Patrick and many others before him, who have sacrificed a lot for so that in the future we may have freedom. Let me say very clearly that we are not intimidated, that we shall fight and fight hard until every Rwandan has freedom.
Thank you. This is Dr. Theogen Rudasingwa. His book is Healing a Nation. You can, and I urge people to go to the Rwandan.com. Dr. Rudasingwa, thank you very, very much. We're going to follow. Of course, we have the trial should be, as I understand, being brought to conclusion, the Yamwasa murder, the case of the attempted murder of Yamwasa. Am I right? They're expecting in March a decision?
Yes, they were expecting a decision soon, and I think it's very clear so far as the investigation has progressed, has shown very clearly how the Rwandan state agents were involved. And I'm sure even in the case of Patrick, though the initial information is sketchy, but it's beyond any doubt whatsoever that the Kagame regime is behind all these assassinations. Mm. But, of course, we shall have to wait for investigations and for the court to determine that indeed this is the case. But for us Rwandans, we have no doubt about it.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you very, very much.
Thank you, sir. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. That's Dr. Theogen Rudasingwa. And he's one of those who has, yes, written a book. We want everyone who has participated, and he's an eyewitness. He lived through the whole experience. By the way, his brother was the former attorney general of Rwanda, who also is in exile and is part of this broad coalition of people who are calling for bringing to justice those who are presently running Rwanda and who are apparently carrying out assassinations. The British government seems to think so, and the Belgian government as well.
Phil, can I just ask and clarify? He says that Tony Blair and Bill Clinton are still involved with this regime?
Absolutely no question about that. Tony Blair is called the special advisor, which, you know, if you have a theory, and I suspect many people do, that there is a phenomenon called neocolonialism and hegemonic influence in a region of importance. Just this morning, I read some wag from the State Department who says, we can't allow the situation in South Sudan to get out of hand. We've invested too much. That's what he said. We've invested too much. Well, you know, I would point out that it isn't California. It's not Colorado. It's not even Puerto Rico. But you have to send Marines, right, to South Sudan. You've made up because you've invested too much. And you're the sweetheart who loves people, right? I mean, that's the part that gets me, is that they give a damn or a nickel worth about the mass of the population. They are just classic interveners. Oh, you two have a quarrel. I think I'll come there. And while I'm there, I think I will set up your economy and suck this thing dry, is roughly, you know. But anyway, Bill Blair, who is just a terrible figure in my opinion, is, yes, the special advisor to Paul Kagame. So far as I'm concerned, Blair, it was your idea. If there was assassinations carried out, directed by that president, it was your idea. It wasn't his. It was your idea, Blair, until you explain otherwise. And by the way, if Blair wants to go on television and say, oh, it didn't happen, I'd love that. Please, get it started. Warm it up, Blair. Let's see if you're going to try that one. I doubt it. He's a snake. I mean, one of the worst characters in modern history, Bill Blair. Anyway.
Tony Blair.
Tony Blair. Who's Bill Blair?
Oh, he's our police chief.
A chief? Yeah. Just a little word here.
There's also Bill Clinton.
Did you get my Christmas card? No. There's Bill Clinton. And, yeah. Maybe that's what I'm doing. I'm creating an amalgam. By the way, Bill Clinton is smart enough to always stay a couple steps away from when there's smoke and blood. Tony Blair is not so smart. You're listening to the Taylor Report. It's CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a break, but I want to just tell you, there is a documentary made by a Montreal documentarist who unfortunately has passed away. However, it is available, a documentary of the murder/assassination of Seth Sendashonga, the former Minister of the Interior. And what makes it particularly important, and we will come back next week with the name of the of the producer and story of that documentary, because you can get that from the Canadian Film Board, I believe. The main figure in telling the story, the narration and on-camera material, is provided by a rather famous woman, Alison DeForge, and she has been at the center of all this debate. She, unfortunately, has also died in Buffalo in a plane crash, but she was the narrator of this documentary, which tells this, explains how the Rwandan agents came and murdered Sessa Ntshango. And like with General Yamwasa, Sessa Ntshango was, there were two attempts. The first one, they wounded him and killed his nephew. And then months went by, and they made a second attempt, and they didn't mess that one up. They used machine guns and killed him and his driver of the vehicle downtown Nairobi. And it was Alison DeForge in the middle of that documentary making the allegation that it was the president of Rwanda, his forces that were responsible. It's horrible to be talking about these things, but this seems to be the kind of regime we have there, and it has its defenders and admirers. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5. You can write to us, Taylor@CIUT.FM, and just check us out on the web, Taylor-Report.com.